Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From the Le Chaux Dome of the Gulf South, the only facility of that size ever built without taxpayer funds. Ladies and gentlemen, what an amazing weekend. Thank you so much, Jenny Lawson. Just poked on in here and straightened out the board in 1 second flat. This weekend, we've been treated to a spectacle I can only call whistling past the graveyard of empires. Because you know that by now that Abdullah Abdullah pulled out of the runoff, the second round runoff for the Afghan presidential election, pulled both his Abdullahs off the ballot. Took his Abdullahs home. And if you don't think that we live, ladies and gentlemen, in an informational bubble, consider this. Check me if I'm wrong, but consider this. I think we, the American people, at least those of us who watch the cable news networks, know more about why Debbie Scozzafava pulled out of the New York congressional primary. No, actually, it's a final general election. Dee Dee Scozzafava. I call her Debbie, but she's Dee Dee. We know more, I say, about why she pulled out as the Republican in the New York congressional race than we know about why Abdullah Abdullah took his Abdullahs home. Dee Dee pulled out, we were told, because conservatives around the country, including Sarah Palin, came in and denounced her as too liberal to be a Republican and therefore advocated everybody vote for the conservative, because there was a third-party conservative in the race, instead, and Dee Dee saw her support crater and saw she was going to lose and pulled out. All we know in most places about why Abdullah Abdullah pulled out is because supposedly he knew he was losing. And when I say whistling past the graveyard of empires, I'm referring both to Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and to House Minority Leader John Boehner, who both said this weekend, well, you know, people pull out of elections all the time. It's still a legitimate election with only one candidate in it. Doesn't affect the legitimacy of Karzai, does it? No. Why would it do that? It might shed light on that supposition if we knew why Abdullah Abdullah pulled out, or at least his stated reasons for pulling out, which were he confronted the Karzai government with a list of demands, which included firing the head of the Independent Electoral Commission, which had supervised the first fraudulent election. You know, can the guy who ran the bad election. Wow, that's radical. And another of his demands, close down the hundreds, if not thousands, of fake polling stations. Polling stations where nobody voted, but where hundreds of votes were counted for Karzai, according to the UN. Karzai refused. He says that's why he pulled out Abdullah Abdullah and went home. So, you know, it won't affect the legitimacy at all, will it? I think I'll still grant full legitimacy to the upstate congressman from New York, whoever's elected. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your brain on the war on drugs. The United Kingdom has a drugs, well, they call them, in at least one newspaper, their drug czar. He's actually the head of the advisory committee of scientists that advises the government on drugs policy over there. And if you think that the George Bush administration was the only administration to say thank you very much to the scientists and then walk on the other way, check this out. And of course, bonus points for British funny name department, because he's a psychiatrist named Professor David Nutt. Okay? All right. We've gotten past that now. He was dismissed as chairman of the Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs on Friday after he reported the results of his advisory council that illegal drugs such as marijuana and ecstasy are less dangerous than alcohol and tobacco. How radical is that? Man, what's he been smoking? He was dismissed by the government because the British government chose to ignore that advice and reclassify marijuana as a more dangerous drug from Class C to Class B. Ooh. He was asked to resign, that is to say, fired by the Home Secretary, who claimed he'd lost confidence in the expert because the expert didn't agree with him. Professor Nutt now says the government is alienating themselves from the scientific community appointed to advise them, and he says more advisors will quit. Already today, one more has. And he says Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of Britain, makes completely irrational statements about cannabis, marijuana, being lethal, which it is not. He is the first Prime Minister, this is the first government that has ever in the history of the Misuse of Drugs Act gone against the advice of its scientific panel. And then it did it again with ecstasy. I think he means the drug, not, you know, the spirit with which they did it. And I have to say, it's not about me overstepping the line, it's about the government overstepping the line. They are making scientific decisions before they've even consulted with their experts. This is your British government on the war on drugs. The stimulus package, which contained not a dollar for the strengthening of the flood protection system here in New Orleans, did contain a lot of other interesting stuff. The administration was told federal agencies to avoid awarding stimulus funds to contractors with troubled histories of work for the federal government. But according to a Washington Post analysis, 33 federal departments and agencies have awarded more than $1 billion in stimulus contracts to at least 30 companies that are ranked by one watchdog group as among the most egregious offenders of state and federal laws. Congratulations, guys. Your penalty is this check. It's a penalty check. It's good as gold. It's good as penalty gold. Government records show that as a group, these contractors have sold defective products, check, manufactured safety tests, check, submitted false travel claims, check, and padded contracts with fraudulent fees, double check. Even a single Google search could raise red flags about some of these contractors' performance, said one congressman. Honeywell International is defending itself against a Justice Department lawsuit accusing it of selling defective shields for bulletproof vests to the Defense and Homeland Security Departments, costing the federal government tens of millions of dollars. But that didn't prevent the company from winning $2.9 million in stimulus funds from the Air Force. Well, they don't need bulletproof vests. They fly above them. I don't see what the problem is. UT Battelle, a partnership of the University of Tennessee and Battelle Memorial Institute, has been awarded 43 STEM contracts worth more than $331 million by the Department of Energy for work at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. In every instance, competitive bidding rules were waived. Obama explicitly warned against awarding contracts without competitive bidding in the weeks after he signed the Stimulus Act. But at least we're following our drug advisor's advice. So far. Year isn't up yet. Hello, welcome to the show.
Chicken man. Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
Thanks, Katie Couric. From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain, from New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. This post-Halloween, boy, does that feel good to say that. Ladies and gentlemen, how are we going to get more nukes? We got to get more nukes. I mean, nuclear power plants. Well, the Obama administration and leading congressional Democrats are wooing wavering Democrats and Republicans to back a climate bill, you know, to deal with the climate thing, by dangling federal tax incentives and new loan guarantees for the building of nuclear power plants. Yeah, yeah. That'll make them even more cheap, too cheap to meter. Clean, safe, too cheap to meter, right? Sure. Uh-oh. Even though financial analysts warn that huge capital needs and a history of cost overruns would constrain what many lawmakers hope will be a nuclear renaissance. That's right. Da Vinci glows green. The elements of a nuclear package under discussion include investment tax credits, a doubling or more of the existing $18 billion in federal loan guarantees for new nuclear plants. We're trying to get them built. Giving nuclear plants access to new clean energy development bank, federally financed training for nuclear plant workers, a new look at reprocessing nuclear fuel. Hello, President Ahmadinejad. And a streamlining of the regulatory approval process because, yes, we all know it needs streamlining, doesn't it? It's arduous to get approval to build a nuclear plant. You can build a bodega in days, and this is designed to put nuclear power on an even footing with wind and solar because they have such difficult waste disposal issues as well. So they all should be on an equal footing, don't you think? This package comes on top of existing incentives that already exist, hence the name existing. So the cost Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, Republican, says people who are involved in writing this bill need to grasp the fact that America's turned the corner on nuclear power. But financial analysts and utility executives warn that while a package of incentives might jumpstart a few new nuclear plants, it will be nowhere near enough to lead to 100 facilities, which is what some proponents are seeing. What kind of glasses are they looking to see that with? Well, the total cost for 100 new nuclear plants, ladies and gentlemen, put on your Glenn Beck pants, $1 trillion. Now, you know that people around at the tea parties are upset because they see all these trillions floating around for the stimulus or for the bailout or this or that. But a trillion for nuclear plants, apparently that's okay. Some people say that by 2030 you could have quite a few going, says a nuclear utility analyst at Standard & Poor's, but 100 is not feasible. The most optimistic number I've read is 50 of them by 2035, and that's the most optimistic number from the perspective of funding, says that analyst. Building 100 plants, says one utility executive who spoke on the condition of anonymity because he didn't want to glow green, would be extremely difficult. Building 100 plants would be extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. He quotes himself as saying extremely difficult twice. He's from the Abdullah School of Quotes. And, of course, no one has begun construction of a nuclear plant in more than 30 years. For the reason why, let's turn to news from the Inspectors General.
He's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
Inspector General. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. A former member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, violated government ethics rules by directly contacting potential employers with business before the commission prior to the end of his term, according to the Regulatory Commission's Inspector General. Jeffrey S. Merrifield twice cast votes on matters involving companies he'd contacted about job prospects. They were the Shaw Group, Westinghouse Electric, and General Electric. It's companies in the nuclear business. could have potentially benefited financially from his votes during the specific time frames in which he was negotiating with the three companies, according to the IG. In addition, the Inspector General's report says that Merrifield had called a senior executive at Exelon. Well, they got to be good. They're Exelon, a Chicago-based utility, and asked him to call companies that were not returning phone calls to Merrifield's attorney who was trying to negotiate jobs on his behalf. He's now, well, what do you know, a senior vice president of the Shaw Group, a construction firm that provides services to most nuclear reactor projects. My job search had no impact on any decision I made as a commissioner of the NRC, he said in an email to the Washington Post this week. One of the two votes in question in the report involved approval of a plan by Shaw to cooperate with China on a Westinghouse nuclear reactor. The other was to approve a change in the criteria for emergency cooling systems, which could also affect work done by Shaw. The Inspector General's report says it is determined that Merrifield did not take effective measures to prevent a potential conflict of interest during the last 2 months of his term. He also failed to report $3,500. Oh, who cares? So, you know, it's clean, cheap, well, $1 trillion cheap, too safe to meter, and regulated maybe too much. You know, let's back off on the regulation. Let him negotiate with his potential employers. What do you say? The FBI's collection of wiretap phone calls and intercepted email has been soaring in recent years, but the Bureau is failing to review significant amounts of such material, partly for lack of translators, according to the Justice Department's Inspector General. Not reviewing such material increases the risk that the FBI will not detect information in its possession that may be important to its counterterrorism and counterintelligence efforts, says the report. The FBI says it's working to reduce the backlog and is continuing to seek to hire or contract with more linguists, as long as they're not gay. No, that's the Army. I don't know about the FBI. Senator Charles Grassley, who has pressed the FBI to improve its translation abilities, praised the Bureau for a recent arrest of several terrorism suspects, but said the linguist department remained a big hole. The Inspector General's report did not contain any specific examples of cases in which the Bureau failed to detect a potential terrorist as quickly as possible. The number of the Bureau's linguists, both staff members and contractors, have fallen as of September last year from a peak in 2005. It met its hiring targets in 2008 for only two of 14 targeted languages, and one of them was Canadian English. That's not true, the last one. The process of hiring linguists has been slowed because of lengthy security vetting and competition with other intelligence agencies that are also trying to hire more translators. Let's all learn Uzbek. What do you say? Come on, let's help out. Does Rosetta Stone have Uzbek? Somebody check on that before the end of the broadcast and not get back to me. The Treasury Department's Inspector General for Tax Administration says cost overruns and schedule delays with the IRS's Business Systems Modernization Program have increased. The modernization program has not achieved the same level of success with meeting cost estimates as in the prior year, nor has the trend of improvement it demonstrated in each of the prior 3 years continued. Too arcane, even for me. Bernie Madoff, the confessed swindler who pulled off the largest Ponzi scheme in history, expressed shock to the Inspector General of the Securities and Exchange Commission that the agency's staff didn't discover his scam on multiple occasions. It was amazing to me that the SEC's enforcement investigators didn't detect the scheme after he told them plainly suspicious information, he told Inspector General H. David Kotz in an interview released this week by the Inspector General, who issued a scathing report last month saying that inexperienced investigators locked in an inefficient and uncommunicative bureaucracy failed to detect Madoff's fraud despite five probes over more than 15 years. That sixth probe would have done it. The Inspector General interviewed Madoff in jail. He's since been moved to a federal prison in North Carolina. Yeah. You know, the winters are milder. Madoff told the Inspector General he expected to get caught during many of the probes, saying he was worried every time. It was a nightmare for me, Madoff said, because his scheme was, quote, very basic stuff, unquote. He also said he never dealt with Eric Swanson, a former SEC official who helped oversee an investigation into Madoff and later married Madoff's niece, Shauna. That's a Shauna for the Goyim, isn't it? Eric Swanson, I'm just guessing. Madoff said he found out about the relationship 6 months before the wedding, which was years after that probe. And finally, from the inspectors general, and tell me if you've heard this one before, a defense contractor that supplied vehicle parts for the Iraqi army sought reimbursements from the U.S. military far in excess of the cost of the items. Really? Profiteering on the war, according to a new report by the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction. The contractor, ACOM Government Services, charged $237 for a vehicle side mirror that was supposed to cost $14, according to the report. The company also submitted invoices to the U.S. military in Iraq seeking reimbursements of almost $200,000 for a bag of 10 washers that was supposed to cost $1.22. Dumb as a military bag of washers, I think I would nominate as a new thing. $10 for a fuse that should have cost 45 cents, $210 for an inner tube that was supposed to cost $24. What, are they going to go floating in the pool at the green in the green zone? What do you use inner tubes for these days? ACOM officials, not Acorn, by the way. This is ACOM. You don't hear about this on TV. They disputed the allegations, telling auditors that the overcharging was the result of billing errors that occurred early in the contract. Oh, well, that's okay then. The company said cumulative adjustments were made. A senior vice president said the company had self-identified and corrected the issues, making immediate repayment over 2 years ago. But the special inspector general said the findings point to larger issues with government contracts issued for work in Iraq. Preliminary audits of 22,000 Defense Department transactions, $10 billion worth, have identified not just overpayments by the government, but duplicate payments, as well as payments to fictitious vendors and fictitious addresses. That's why that war... Well, you know, we're still paying off the Sunnis, aren't we? We better be. News from outside the bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And on a related issue, McClatchy reports on our new war. Only about 6% of Afghans are estimated to have electricity. And according to McClatchy, contractors in Iraq are making some of the same, doing some of the same things they did in Iraq. In Afghanistan, are doing some of the same things they did in Iraq. We built an electric plant to try to deal with the electricity problem. The plant will need a $70 million in aid, or the government will, to truck in diesel fuel for the plant, and at least another $60 million to maintain and repair it. U.S. officials who once saw it as a major supplier of electricity in the region now describe it as an expensive backup system. It's a sophisticated power plant, says the assistant inspector general who's overseeing it, but the reality is it's totally dependent on diesel fuel, which has to come from outside sources. The plant's construction costs ballooned from $240 to $310 million. The companies acknowledge delays. The original target dates were best-case deal. Among Afghans, the power plant became known as Karzai's winter coat, designed to keep him comfortably in power through the winter of 2009. You know, we used to think, ladies and gentlemen, that man was a creature that learned from his mistakes, and I think that is correct. Each time we make the same mistakes, we do them a little better.
And I said, my darling. I really love you, love you, love you. But you never
This is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, made a lot of news this week, aside from saying that, you know, one candidate, elections with where there's just one candidate, those were legitimate too, which I'm sure would cheer all of the former leaders of the Soviet Union. But she made other news as well. She was on a visit to trouble spots and stopped off in Pakistan, which I think you could credibly say is a trouble spot at this point in time, and got some attention for being fairly blunt in saying that we probably could have caught Osama bin Laden had the Pakistanis been a little bit more energetic in their part of the deal. And calling on the Pakistani government to get a little more serious about the insurgencies and terrorists within their borders, which is sort of regarded as not done, or not done by secretaries of state. Anyway, she did it, and Pakistanis said, no problem. We're good with that. The week began with leaked passages from a book by David Plouffe, Gesundheit, who was the architect, some think, of along with David Axelrod, of President Obama's presidency, President Obama's ability to be called President Obama at this point in time. He writes that at our first meeting to discuss the vice presidency, what surprised me was that Obama was clearly thinking more seriously about picking Hillary Clinton than Axe, David Axelrod, and I had realized. He said if a central criteria measured who could be the best VP, she had to be included in that list. She was competent, could help in Congress, would have international bona fides, and had been through this before, although in a different role. Yeah, First Lady. We met again a couple of weeks later, Plouffe continues, in mid-June, and winnowed the list down to about 10 names. At our next meeting, we narrowed the list down to 6. Barack continued to be intrigued by Hillary. Quote, I still think Hillary has a lot of what I'm looking for in a VP, he said to us. Smarts, discipline, steadfastness. I think, Obama continued, Bill may be too big a complication. If I picked her, my concern is that there would be more than two of us in the relationship. Neither Axe nor I were fans of the Hillary option, Plouffe writes. Still, we were very careful not to object too forcefully. This needed to be his call. In the early August, he narrowed the list down to 3 names. Hillary did not make that last cut. At the end of the day, Obama decided there were just too many complications outweighing the potential strengths. Unquote, David Plouffe. So, in essence, he's writing that Obama basically rejected Hillary Clinton as vice president because there was an elephant in the room, an 800-pound gorilla in the living room there. All of this may mean there's another episode of Clinton something straight ahead next here on Le Show.
Imagine something. The State Department years.
Of course, Mrs. Clinton, it would be far outside the purview of anyone of my rank to do something so rash as to issue threats to the Secretary of State of our patron and protector.
I'm sorry, Mr. Minister. I just thought I heard you say...
Of course, we want to do everything possible to deal with the terrorist threat.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that cooperation will in no way be dependent on what you choose to say publicly to us or about us.
Well, I appreciate that. It's a somber and mature judgment.
I'm just saying I can't continue this conversation until you recover your head.
Well, of course I would in ordinary circumstances in a Muslim country, but I've got a video conf back to Washington in a few minutes, and I really do have my hair exactly right for it, and the scarf thingy just messes it up. Oh, there's my conf. Let's resume this in half an hour, and I'll have the...
scarf thingy. Mm-hmm. All right, fine. Thank you, Madam Secretary.
All right.
Stand by for a video conference with the former president.
Former president?
Thanks, man. Hey, Hill, Don Imus did that for me. Wasn't that cool?
Bill, I'm expecting to be on with the current president.
I know, Toots. I just wanted to say how proud I was of you when you called out the Pakistanis in public. I mean, to get the state bureaucracy and the White House to sign off on that must have been some heavy lifting, babe.
Bill, please don't babe me on a video conf. And yes, it was a tough sell.
Well, I mean, plus you look pretty cool with the thing on your head.
Thanks. Was there any particular reason you...
Mainly, I wanted to show Don the setup. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, from this dining room to wherever she is in the world, you know, with one remote click.
That's wild. Thanks, Mr. President.
Well, as long as I've got you on this line, let me just say a very overdue thanks.
Oh, you already thanked me for the compliment.
Not for the compliment. For destroying my chance to be the first female vice president of the United States. Just like, you know... Forever.
Toots, I have no idea what...
Don't toots me, either. Mm. This is in David Plouffe's new book about the process of narrowing down the Veep possibles.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the last six. I was out of the last three in the book. And you know, it's only a book.
Mm-hmm.
He says the reason is Obama thought there'd be too much you. For some reason, he thought, buy one, get two. Who knows where he got that from?
Now listen here, Hill. You think you'd rather be Joe Biden right now having to leak his view of the war to the Washington Post to get just a smidgen of traction in the room? You know they're laughing at him behind his back. You're out there in the world dealing with diplomats, meeting your own new Rolodex full of important people who can help you get your new foundation rolling when it's time. Dick Cheney doesn't have a foundation now, does he?
He's got dozens. It's called the Great Right-Wing Conspiracy. Bill, you could fool yourself about my gig, but I don't have that luxury. I've got the chick's job. I'm the third female Secretary of State. Fourth, if you count Colin Powell. I'm doing a job, a very important and constitutional job and all that. But I could have been the first woman to be a heartbeat away.
Hillary, you are hobnobbing with literal nabobs, and Joe Biden's taking the train back to Delaware for the weekend. You're making a difference and living the kind of life that until now the only member of our family to enjoy was me.
See, it's all about you.
No, that was about you, with a little bit about me at the end there.
The bottom line, Mr. President, Mr. Foundation Head...
Mm-hmm.
Is that they couldn't trust you to keep your end of the deal with me to stay out of the way because this is my turn.
It's still your turn. I'm saying it's more your turn than it would have been with you as vice president. How easy would it have been for Obama to marginalize you in that office? You'd have been out presiding at the recarpeting of post offices all over the Midwest.
Hmm.
This way you run your own department. You're right there in the Constitution, third in line of succession.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you shake an Arab's hand, you make the papers and you grow in stature. Biden can't go anywhere. He's not sent. catbird seat, Madam Toots.
I have to give you credit, Bill. You're still the best country lawyer ever to come out of Arkansas. I also appreciate you not dragging out the nobody would have known your name if you hadn't married me argument this time around.
Mm-hmm. I was getting to that.
But you see, you have something I'll never have.
You noticed.
You have a place in the history books. Nobody could ever take that away from you.
Well, I know, but...
Only the second president in all of American history to be impeached. Nobody else can ever do that. So now, who gets to be the first female vice president? Condi Rice? Janet Napolitano? Sarah Palin?
Well, that's ridiculous. You never run for vice president twice. Look, Hill. If you want me to say I'm sorry that you're out there on the front line of foreign policy rather than sitting in the Situation Room being ignored, okay, I'm sorry.
You know, I don't care what Wolf Blitzer thinks of me.
Not that Situation Room, the real one.
Look, Bill, I'm sorry to say I'm old enough to remember Nixon and Carter. A few months in, they made a game out of humiliating and ignoring their secretaries of state, and they were all guys.
Well, yeah.
And I might add, this is not just all personal. Mm-hmm. Biden's trying to wussify the policy. With me in the room, there'd be another strong vote for our being up to our eyeballs in turning Afghanistan around.
Hon, I can't help what's happened. You know, one thing I learned during my 14-step program was that you can't rewrite the past. What we can try to do is make the best of the future. I also learned to pass on the nachos.
No, I appreciate all that. Wasn't it a 12-step program?
Well, I was kind of a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
Look, Hill, you go have your teleconf with the chief. Let's all, just all of us, me included, recommit to make you not the first anything, but the best Secretary of State, at least since Cordell Hull.
Okay, Bill. Let's do that.
Youthful angst, middle-aged power. Together they add up to Clinton something. The State Department years. Look for us on Facebook.
Rhythm was all around us. We were is really stepping out. My baby said,
I'm living for this music.
I ask her what it's all about. She says,
I'm such a silly girl. This stuff has got me in a whirl. Ain't it live music? Live music.
And that was live the night music. She left me. Danced herself into my memory. My baby had to leave me for the drummer.
For the drummer.
I guess I'll never solve that mystery. I think I've learned my lesson. Just don't get too near the band when it's
live music. Live music.
A little before she left me. I ask her what it's all about. She says she feel like dancing.
Like
you feel like stepping out.
Lost her to a drummer. Man, that's got to feel bad. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
All respect and everything, but you know. Ladies and gentlemen, Democratic Representative Alan Grayson of Florida has apologized for calling an advisor to Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, quote, a K Street whore, unquote. I offer my sincere apology to Linda Robertson, an advisor to Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, Grayson said in a statement emailed to reporters, I did not intend to use a term that is often and correctly seen as disrespectful of women. This characterization of Ms. Robertson made during a radio interview last month in the context of a debate over whether the Fed should be independently audited was inappropriate, and I apologize. She's not a whore. Not a K Street whore. Deadline New Orleans, right here. Right here, where you got them shoes. A skit during a pep rally at Brother Martin High School drew criticism from parents, students, and education leaders. The skit was supposed to be a spoof on Batman Dark Knight, the movie, because their opponents were the St. Augustine Purple Knights. However, some people say the incident had racist overtones. The Brother Martin students dressed up like St. Aug High School students with stockings over their faces. Then at the end of the skit, one student pretended to arrest another dressed in the St. Aug outfit. Now, the St. Aug principal has released a statement on the matter. It's no problem to spoof schools, but having them in the St. Aug uniform should have been sufficient, he said. I've spoken to the folks over at Brother Martin. They have apologized, and I've accepted. Our school is going to come together and make this a learning experience. Brother Martin administrators said in their statement, we acknowledge that some of the images from the skit that appeared on our website caused offense and hurt in the community. We've offered our sincere apology. We've always appreciated our great relationship with St. Aug. Brother Martin got killed in their prep football game last night. Just karma, maybe? I don't know. Southwest Airlines has apologized to a San Jose mom who was kicked off a plane along with her unruly 2-year-old son early this week. Southwest spokesman Marilee McGinnis told the San Jose Mercury News the airline did not regret the decision to yank Pamela Root and her son off the plane, which flight attendants made in the interests of safety, just the inconvenience it caused the family. Root said she accepts Southwest's apology. In the future, we just hope children are not separated from their luggage. The crew bounced Root and her son off a flight in Amarillo on her way home to San Jose because passengers could not hear pre-flight safety announcements, McGinnis said. Our flight attendants gave the child juice and coloring books and were sorry she was inconvenienced. Root will receive a refund for the flight and a $300 travel voucher, which is more than I've received from Delta, by the way. You know, not only did they lose my bag, they couldn't tell me where it was for 3 days, and of course, 2 days. And of course, they've got, you know, those computerized codes on every, barcodes on every bag. So how can you, well, it's reassuring that Big Brother may be watching, but doesn't really care. Republican Erie County Executive Chris Collins, this is in upstate New York, is apologizing for a joke. Oh, sorry, in which he compared Democratic New York State Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, an Orthodox Jew, to Hitler and the Antichrist. Man, who are his writers? During an Erie County Republican dinner in Buffalo, Collins joked that Nostradamus predicted there would be three Antichrists. Collins said Napoleon and Hitler are widely considered the first few, and that he was pretty sure Speaker Silver was the third. Saturday night, I made a poor joke regarding the Speaker of the Assembly, Sheldon Silver. I want to extend my sincerest apologies to him for my comments. I have placed a call to the Speaker's office to offer my apologies directly, said the statement from the apologetic humorist. Deadline, Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City Chiefs running back Larry Johnson issued his second apology in 12 months this week and was told to stay away from the team while the NFL and the Chiefs complete their investigation into his use of a gay slur. As Johnson was releasing his apology, a national gay rights advocacy organization called on the league and the team to take disciplinary action against the two-time Pro Bowler. And he's not a Pro Bowler. He played in the Pro Bowl. Pro Bowler would be something else, but tell that to Google. This latest chapter in Johnson's stormy career began Sunday night when he questioned Coach Todd Haley's football credentials on his Twitter account. He used the slur during an exchange with one of his Twitter followers. His Twitter stuff's getting people in trouble. A day later, he used it again as he brushed off reporters and told them he wouldn't comment. But the team, where's the team's apology? Is the team apology? The Chiefs said they've told Johnson he would not be allowed to practice with the team or participate in team activities until the matter was resolved. I guess that's a form of apology. By the way, I'll be making my mistakes on Twitter at LeTwits, LeTwits. A former car dealer who ripped off dozens of clients won't see any jail time. Buddy Harvey, who used to operate Harv's Cars, originally faced 63 criminal charges but pleaded guilty to 8 criminal counts. He apologized to his victims before he was sentenced to 5 years of monitoring by parole officials. I lived shame and humility for the past 3.5 years, says the rip-off car dealer. He lived shame. I've made strides in my restitution. I've been able to pay $100,000 over the last couple of years, and I'll make full repayment to every last customer and damaged party. Delta? Any comment? Dateline Australia. Federal Community Affairs Minister Jenny Macklin says a national apology is going to recognize the ongoing hurt suffered by Australians held in care, that is to say, away from their parents, when they were children. For the most part, these were cold, loveless, authoritarian places with no time at all for the exuberance and innocence of childhood. The Prime Minister will make the apology next month to former child migrants and other Australians who grew up in out-of-home care. About 500,000 people are believed to be in the group known as the Forgotten Australians. Macklin says many of these continue to suffer from the abuse and neglect they suffered in childhood. WZEE Madison, Wisconsin personality Tyler Cruz issued an apology this week for soliciting nude pictures via email for a concert tickets giveaway. Clear Channel operations manager Mike Ferris says it was a bit of harmless, frivolous fun. The First Lady of California, Maria Shriver, released a statement through her office apologizing for her latest driving gaffe, parking in a red zone for over an hour. Earlier this month, she was caught on tape driving while on a cell phone 3 separate times, which is illegal in California. She apologized for that, too. ESPN broadcaster Bob Greasy has been suspended for 1 week over a remark he made about NASCAR driver Juan Pablo Montoya. ESPN spokesman Josh Krulowitz says Greasy will be not working again this week. Krulowitz says ESPN has spoken to Greasy and he understands the comment was inappropriate. During ESPN's broadcast of the Minnesota-Ohio State game last week, a graphic was shown listing the top 5 drivers in NASCAR's points race. Fellow analyst Chris Spielman asked where was Montoya, who was Colombian. Greasy replied he was, quote, out having a taco. He twice apologized on air for the remark. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yes, no matter what you may hear, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Somebody stole my thunder, and now somebody's gonna pay. I'll soon be taken out from under, and love to live another day. Well, now that's how somebody smashed my action. I'm busted, but revenge is sweet. I'm gonna get me satisfaction. I'm gonna get me sweets to eat. The doors.
consequence. No one told me someone's tall like fingers would make up with that which I love best. That's how, just how somebody stole my thunder. I wonder if they know it's mine. It could have been a goof or a blunder, or did they mean to rob me blind? The consequence. No one told me someone's tall like fingers would make up with that which I love best. That's how just now somebody stole my thunder. I wonder if they know it's mine. It could have been a goof or blunder. I'm gonna lose my tiny mind if they don't pay me back in kind. Or are they trying to bug my party line? They stole my thunder. I wonder why. Somebody stole my thunder. Somebody stole my thunder. I wonder why.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the war, won't you? Come on, sing it for me now.
Soft, listen to the war.
Thanks so much. China is often accused of not doing enough to reduce the carbon dioxide and other pollution pouring from its factories and coal-fueled power stations, but a new report suggests the country is doing more to tackle climate change than it gets credit for. In fact, its environmental standards surpass the U.S. in some key measures. The World Resources Institute, a respected environmental think tank based in Washington, this according to New Scientist, says China is on track to meet the mean climate change target, a 20% reduction in energy intensity, by the end of next year. Cutting the energy intensity of the Chinese economy like this will put a brake on the growth of the country's carbon dioxide emissions. China's making progress also towards its goal of generating 15% of its electricity from renewable sources by 2020, according to the report. So let's buy more cheap Chinese clothing, shall we? News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the Internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Halloween not coming back for a whole year if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks, and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM, right here, where you got them shoes in New Orleans, for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this broadcast and the playlists of the music heard here on, always available at harryshearer.com. And check out Bonus Baby, yours now to watch at mydamnchannel.com. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.